Baker Mayfield, undraftable, off my board.
The Cleveland Browns select Baker Mayfield.
Hi, welcome in, Browns fans. It's the OBR Film Breakdown. I'm your host, Jake Burns. We have a fun weekend content edition for you here coming up. Before we get to that, I want to real quick remind you, if you have not seen on my social feed or the OBR, Andrew Berry was on the Athletic Football Show with Robert Mays. He did a quick 15-minute interview. He's a busy guy and gave some things away. He's a really good GM in terms of being able to not say much at all while talking, which is a unique talent. But there were some things I think you could take away from it. I really liked his quote on quarterback play. You know, quarterback is the most important position in football. We want to make sure that we have an environment that's conducive to that position group, producing at a high level, because that's how we believe you have sustained success in the NFL. Insightful take there about how the Browns are surrounding their quarterback with talent, whether up front, wide receiver, running back, to make his life in the early stages of his career as easy as possible, because that's what they say, making the quarterback's life easy, especially early, is a way to find sustained success, because then as quarterback's careers wear on, it's just a point I've been making of late, you have a chance for that quarterback to be the reason that he carries others, the reason he carries your entire offense. So really like that quote. And then another one about data-driven approaches, and this was right as he was talking about how the Browns approach the draft and how they approach preparations for it, scenarios, which I think it was a fun conversation about how they spend April laying out how all these different things could shake out, so that when a situation arrives with Greg Newsome on the board or a situation arrives where you can move up for JOK, they've played these things out so many times that it's not any sort of surprise for them. I thought this was really insightful. And he talked about the data-driven research. We have a very strong research team and strategy group that we use throughout all of our football operations, no different than in any business. We value data, and we value quality data with our decision-making, which kind of goes toward what we're going to talk about on Sunday's podcast. Yes, we have two weekend bonus content editions here, which is I try to do once a month. We have a podcast tomorrow talking about those data-driven decisions. We're going to talk about some data today, too. Pretty excited about that. Just go to the OBR, and there is a page at the front here where we talk about Andrew Berry going on the Athletic Football Show and kind of what he said, and the link to that podcast. You can find it. You can listen to it. I think it's a good 15, 20 minutes. I think they also talked to Packers coverage as well about Aaron Rodgers in the first part of it before they get to the Andrew Berry interview. But there was a good question about the data from his early career, Andrew Berry, that he never thought could really work its way into his everyday GM life. And he's kind of like, I can't answer that question, man. So I thought that was interesting, especially like GPS data and stuff. I'm sure there's so many things he could say, but he has to walk that tight rope that the guys in the public spectrum do, because he doesn't want to give anything away there. So I think Berry is crafted a nice interview-based role where he will go on shows and talk to you about some philosophy things, but he won't give too much away. So worth the listen. It's on the OBR homepage. You can find it there. There's an article on him giving a sneak peek to the behind the scenes in Berea. You can find that podcast there and listen to it if you would like. Before we get to today's show, though, I want to go ahead and talk about a quick Blue Wire initiative. If you're enjoying listening to this podcast, the OBR Film Breakdown, what's stopping you from grabbing a mic and starting your own show? And there's no better place to host than Blue Wire Hustle. Hustle was created to give everyone the opportunity to take your podcast to the next level. Or if you want to host a podcast and just don't know how to start, Hustle's the perfect place for you to do so. I know Brad Ward with All Eyes on Cleveland uses Blue Wire Hustle. It's fantastic stuff. As a part of the program, you'll receive personal cover art, Q&As with Blue Wire's top podcasters, access to community Discord, and an e-learning course full of tips and tricks. And on top of all that, we'll get your show pushed out on all of the major podcast hosting places such as Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, and many others. And the best part is you can get all of this for just $15 a month, the same rate as any other hosting site would charge just for the initial setup. So if you're ready to do more than just listening to us talk about your Cleveland Browns, then make your own voice heard in Hustle. Acceptance into the program is limited, so get your application in today. To apply, go to bwhustle.com/join. Again, bwhustle.com/join. Check out the description box of this episode if you want to find out more. And now to today's show, where we will talk to @CleveTA, who does fantastic stuff for Sharp Football and the Sharp Angles podcast, where he talks about gambling data. I think he's one of the smarter guys with this stuff, looking at player odds for MVP, Defense Player of the Year, a bunch of different awards that I think it's really interesting to bring to light, some things that you can bet on for the Browns football season, and their over-under win total, stuff like that. So let's get over to our interview with CleveTA and learn how to make some money during this football season. All right, for our weekend bonus content, we are going to talk about sports gambling. I want to make you some money. I want to talk about the Browns a little bit in there, too, kind of sprinkle in where there could be value for Browns players. If you're interested in watching your team profit and watching your pockets prosper and your team prosper simultaneously, Mr. CleveTA is the guy to give us that information. How are you, my friend?
What's up, Jake? How are you?
I'm good, man. I'm good. I want to go through some of these because I think that the thing that if they're listeners to this pod, traditionally have not had a chance to bet on the Browns winning and making money. So it's kind of an exciting time. They got some players that could profit on this thing. We're not going to just talk about Browns. I want to kind of, we're going to go through some of these categories. Some are Browns specific, some are not. But if we end up touching on some Browns, that's because they have some guys that you could have serious conversations about. We'll get to that. We'll start with win-loss. Where do you see the Browns sitting across most betting platforms, and kind of where are you at on their win-loss with this new extra game this year?
Yeah, so if you look around, they're about 10.5, I think, in most places. Then it all depends on, the amount of juice you want to lay for the over mainly. So, like on DraftKings, I think they're plus 105 over 10.5, which means, I guess in layman's term, for anyone out there who's not really a sports betting expert here, it's the amount of money you have to lay out in order to win $100. So if it's plus 105, that means you bet 100, you get 105 back. If it's minus, 110 or 120 or something like that, that means you have to bet 120 or 110 to win 100. So that's kind of how the odds work there. But so in general, the Browns are about 10.5. But depending on the sports book you use, they're either, just barely a plus, 105 or 100, or they're like a minus, 110 or 120 in that ballpark. I would lean slightly to the over, but I think it's to the point with the Browns. And, we've seen it. They're getting a lot of national love. Obviously locally we were really excited, really hyped up about what happened last year and the prospects this year, but a lot of national pundits are picking the Browns to be contenders for the Super Bowl as well. So you see that factored into some of these prices in the betting markets. And so, I wouldn't sit here and say that there's a ton of value in betting the over in the Browns win total. I mean, I think the number is just about right. But I think they're good enough, especially with that extra game, that, I think 11 or 12 wins is certainly in the higher end of probabilities. Now, that all depends on injuries and all those sorts of things. But, you look at their schedule based on current win totals, and that's a way that I think is a smart way to really look at a strength of schedule. Don't look at last year's figures. Look at what the current betting markets are for each team and apply that to the schedule, and you'll see that the Browns are the third easiest schedule in the NFL based on that. They have a pretty good, what we call a net rest advantage, like 11th in the NFL, meaning they have more rest versus their opponents in aggregate for the season. So if the opponent's coming off a Monday night game and you're playing, off of a Sunday game, you get a 1 day rest advantage. You do that kind of throughout the entire season, and the Browns are actually at a positive 4. So that's positive for them. They have bottom fifth or they're bottom 5 in terms of most travel miles. So they don't have a lot of travel that they have to deal with. They don't have a lot of tough road trips. They're one of the only teams that has 3 straight home games during the season, weeks 6 through 8. So they have a lot of things going for them. The schedule shouldn't be too difficult. They play probably the two worst teams in the NFL in Houston and Detroit. So they've got a lot of things, I think, that are going for them from a scheduling standpoint. We know that the talent is there. They get OBJ back. Their entire offense is back, as we know. Great offensive line. Defensively, obviously, there's going to be a bunch of new starters, but I think from a talent perspective, they're up there in terms of just at least the top half of the NFL. So I think it all kind of you mix that all together, and I think 11 or 12 win season is certainly in the works. And with that extra game, I think that the 10.5, you know, I would lean over if I had to, but it's not a strong play for me.
Talk about too, and you might have kind of brought this up a little bit, but people look at schedules year to year. They talk about those one-score games, teams that have good fortune in those one-score games. And Cleveland's a team that is on that list, but that's misleading, right? Can you explain to listeners a little bit of why that's misleading for Cleveland?
Yeah, so you know what you're talking about is people have looked at the kind of the regression stats. So the NFL is really made for most teams to go 8-8, right? There's some outliers, obviously, yeah. The really good ones and the really bad ones. But in general, a big chunk of the NFL should be right around 500. And, it's whether it be fumble luck or turnover margin or those sorts of things, it kind of lends itself into how do you do in one score games? Because in reality, you really shouldn't excel or be really bad at close games. Like it's kind of one of those things where, in general, most teams should be right around 500. And the Browns last year were 7-2 in one score games. And so a lot of people will look at that and say, oh, all right, that's a reason why they should take a step back next year, that they're not going to get that kind of fortunate again to win all those close games. But when you look a little deeper, and we know this as Browns fans, we watched all those games, there's a couple of cases where they allow teams to score kind of really late in while they're playing prevent to turn those, maybe a double digit score, double digit game or double digit margin into a one score margin. They actually led the NFL. It happened three times last year where they allowed the opponent to score a touchdown or a field goal with under a minute left to make a double digit margin, a single score margin. And it's like one of those things where, if we consider this kind of a quote unquote luck, regression stat, that really doesn't tell the story. I mean, especially in the cases, for example, the Titans game or the Eagles game, those are two examples where, they controlled that entire game and in both cases, but then, they allowed the Titans to score kind of a meaningless touchdown with a few seconds left. Same with the Eagles that really didn't, they really weren't threatened to lose those games. And so, you kind of throw those out and it's not really a 7-2 kind of a record in one score games. It's closer to 500. So, and that doesn't even include the Nick Chubb, kneeling at the 1 yard line against Houston. Yeah. I mean, in any other situation, he scores that touchdown and instead of, a three point close win, it's actually a 10 point win. So, you just kind of have to dig a little bit deeper with some of these things. And so, I think that's a little bit of a misleading indicator. And that also, also the point differential issue, they had a negative 11 point differential and it's the only team in the NFL last year with over 9 wins to have a negative point differential. And that's another reason why, people say that what they did last year was a little bit misleading because they were outscored, they got blown out when they lost and they won a lot of close games. But again, if you take away some of those last second kind of meaningless scores, and you add in a Nick Chubb touchdown and with a minute left when he's running free and those sorts of things, then they really were a positive point differential team. So I think some of those things get taken out of context and you just really have to dig in, dig deep with some of this stuff to see kind of what the true numbers are. And I think with the Browns, it's a little bit misleading.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk. But it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
That's great. I mean, that's the context we need. I think people need to understand that because it gets brought up. It gets brought up, and I understand it. It's folks trying to find those trends, trying to find those patterns, those regressions. But you have to be careful with Cleveland. That's the insight I was hoping you had. You provided. Let's talk Coach of the Year award. It's usually a narrative award. Seems to go to guys in their first year of a role or, in a bounce back second year. It's tough sledding. I know Stefanski was up there. I've seen some graphics that he's up there, but hard for him to win this award unless the Browns win. They got to win a lot of games, right?
Yeah, so I've done some analysis. So for the Sharp Football site last year, I talked about Coach of the Year. I posted on Twitter as well. And actually last offseason, I listed four or five guys that really fit this narrative, you know, fit the filters, and Stefanski was right up there. So it made a lot of sense. So, you know, when you look historically, the last 13 winners of Coach of the Year have all won 10 plus games. Okay. So you obviously have to win double digit games, whether you make the playoffs or not, you've got to at least be in contention. The average preseason win total for those teams was 7.3. So none of them, by the way, had a win total going into the season of 10 or more. So you're not looking for, you know, the coach that wins the most games. That's not who wins Coach of the Year. Usually it's who makes the biggest leap, who comes kind of either from out of nowhere or, you know, takes a team that wasn't very good last year and improves them enough to either make the playoffs or come really close. So nobody had a win total of at least 10 wins. And on average, the prior year, that team went 6-10. And the average win improvement was 6.2 wins. So you're talking about teams that are kind of in that, 6-9 win kind of win total expectation that ends up winning double digits. Six of the last 13 winners, just like Stefanski, were first-year head coaches. So again, narrative based. So it's, you know, who takes a bad team and turns them into at least a double digit win team is really who's going to win this award. So, you know, Stefanski really doesn't fit that. Obviously, going back to back, I don't even know if that's happened where a coach of the year has gone back to back. The Browns already have high expectations. They won 11 games last year. They have a win total. It's 10.5. Doesn't fit at all, really. So some guys that maybe do fit that narrative. Brandon Staley is like the bullseye, right? So he's a guy that we know well here in Northeast Ohio, and he's going to a very talented team in the Chargers, and Justin Herbert, obviously a really good young quarterback. They did not make the playoffs last year. They have a win total, I think, of 9 right now. So they kind of fit that narrative of a guy that's a first-year head coach who is taking a team that's, you know, in that kind of 7-9 win category. And, you know, if they can win 11, 12, 13 games, obviously tough division, but if they can do that, he's obviously right up there. He's from what I see, is the leader right now in terms of the award. I think he was like 20-1 as of a few weeks ago. Now he's 13-1. So he's definitely getting some sharp money there from some of the smart people that are doing some of this work. I think Arthur Smith is another guy who could make sense now, obviously without Julio Jones. That hurts things, but that actually might help them because now expectations are even lower. And they're a team that has a win total of about 7, 7.5. They only won 4 games last year. So he kind of fits that narrative. If the Falcons can win, you know, 10 games this year, he can definitely fit that narrative. And the fact that they're going to be doing it without Julio Jones, I think, makes a lot of sense. And then the last one, the last guy I think that makes sense, it's a longer shot, is Urban Meyer. He's at 28-1. You're talking about a team that won, what, 1 or 2 games last year. He's got a rookie quarterback, so they've got that upside. They're only expected to win 6 games this year. They do have probably the second easiest division in the NFL to win. Obviously, the Titans added Julio recently, so that's going to make it tougher. But it's not a really difficult division to win. They've got some talent, and he's one of those guys. He's a big motivator. No matter what you think of him off the field, I guess, and whatnot, and some of the moves they've made, he's a strong motivator. You might be able to get a year or two of really good team activity out of the Jags, and if they can win, you know, surprise and win 10 games, he definitely has a shot. So those are probably 3 names I think that make the most sense based on some of the criteria that I mentioned.
Yeah, Urban is I think we all know where it's going, but yeah, you're right, it could be a 2-year flash, and before it, like most urban opportunities, burns out. But there's that early upside. So interesting for listeners if they want to get in on that. Defensive Player of the Year draws my eye, TA, because, you know, the Browns have a guy who, if he doesn't come down with COVID, has a real shot at winning it last year. I know it's Aaron Donald's award to lose every year, and TJ Watt continues to mop up a lot of sacks there just simply from rushing from his, like, wide 12 technique there in Pittsburgh. But, I mean, you think Miles is a real shot? What do his odds look like there?
Yeah, so he's right behind Aaron Donald at 6-1 on DraftKings. Aaron Donald's 4-1. I mean, Miles has got everything kind of teed up for him, right? He's at a sexy position. It's usually the guys that sack the quarterback that win this award. I mean, on a random occasion, you might get a, you know, a shutdown corner like a Stephon Gilmore or Jalen Ramsey who really have just kind of a standout year. But in general, it's a pass rusher award. So I think Miles is definitely going to make a strong case. We'll see. Hopefully some of the additions in the defensive line, like a Clowney and Tack McKinley, et cetera, can maybe take some pressure off him. And he can get to the quarterback a little bit more. And obviously, you know, without the COVID issues, have a full season. I think he definitely is right up there at the top. And, you know, I think with some of these awards, you see it with kind of Mahomes at MVP. You know, so these voters might get a little bit of fatigue, right, voting for the same guy every year with Aaron Donald. So Myles Garrett's kind of the next best, you know, the next big thing. And if the Browns can win their division and obviously do what we think they can do, he's right up there. So I think that's definitely one that I would take a stab at with Myles Garrett. Just looking at the list, just for interested parties. I mean, I think Chase Young really, you know, caught my eye just because I'm an Ohio State grad. You know, he had a great year last year, and I think that he definitely has a chance to really step up and have a monster season. I mean, he's at 16-1. He's now the sixth highest guy on the board. So those are probably outside of Myles Garrett. I think Chase Young really is a guy who's ready to take that leap to the kind of the next level. So that's a couple that I think are standing out. But I think Myles clearly is right at the top along with Aaron Donald.
Well, then you got the other factory brothers, the Bosa boys that could obviously take those leaps to Ohio State. Just ridiculous defensive end talent.
They've got three of the top six. It's crazy.
And then, you know, like Jack Sawyer's coming through, and they think the Zach Harrison kid's going to be really good as he kind of steps into his own. It's just ridiculous. Well, you mentioned MVP. I know the only play, it's typically a quarterback award. The only play is Baker, but it's kind of like, where are the odds on Baker? Is he worth throwing a couple bucks on, or is it like you could invest your money a little better in some other places with that one?
Yeah, and so I'll give some background as well, just similar to the Coach of the Year, because it's a very, like you said, quarterback-heavy award. 13 of the last 14 award winners have been quarterbacks. Adrian Peterson snuck in there a handful of years ago, but 8 straight winners have been quarterbacks, so you kind of narrow your field right there. None were on a team with less than 11 wins for that season, so obviously you got to be a playoff team. The average preseason win total, interestingly, of those 13 quarterbacks has been at least 10. So, again, a team with high expectations that has a shot to win double digits and make the playoffs. And so you can probably go a little bit lower. You know, there are instances like Lamar Jackson a couple of years ago. The Ravens were only, I think, 8.5 was the win total at the time. I think Patrick Mahomes, when he won it a few years ago, was right around 8. I think Cam Newton, when he won, was in that 7-8 range. But, you know, in general, that's kind of as far down as you can go. So for me, I think Baker at 33-1, his odds have dropped. I think he was at 40-1 a handful of weeks ago. You know, he's obviously fits all those criteria, right? Now, the issue is the Browns are such a run-heavy team, and they rely on the run game so much. Is he going to be able to have those attempts? Is he really going to put up the numbers? And so you almost have to have them be in a lot of shootouts. And if we think the defense is going to be a lot better this year, you probably aren't going to see that as much. You know, I think another year in the Stefanski offense, you know, he's a real sharp guy. And we know that the front office is a very analytically based thinkers. And so they know that, you know, you're not going to win a Super Bowl with a run game per se. You need to really be able to throw the ball in this league. And so with OBJ out there, maybe, you know, he takes a step up with some of the big plays. You know, we didn't have that big play potential really for most of last year. So, you know, you get OBJ in there, and maybe that, you know, increases his touchdown total and his yardage total. Maybe he's a little more aggressive down there. So I think he can prop up some of his numbers as well. And if the Browns are a 13, you know, if they do get the 13-14 win type of season, you know, he's going to be right in there in the top 3 or 4, to be honest, because they're not going to win just because of the run game. They're going to win because of Baker Mayfield. So I don't think that's a bad – I think of all the – you know, after you get through the kind of the elite guys at the top, the Mahomes and Rodgers and Brady's of the world, it's, you know, Baker's really kind of the class of that, I think, kind of second level, in my opinion. If you want one other long shot, again, this is purely an upside guy who kind of checks a lot of the boxes from a team perspective, is Tua Tagovailoa from the Dolphins. And he's at 60-1. Now, again, you're taking a major leap, and a lot of people took that leap with Lamar Jackson 2 years ago, and they got rewarded. Some people thought that Josh Allen last year was a sneaky surprise guy. So this is kind of for me, Tua would kind of fit that. I mean, Miami, I think, has done a really good job of adding offensive weapons all over the wide receiver core with Will Fuller and Jalen Waddle. I think they've got a really smart staff in general in front office. And look, Tua is very talented. He had a really rough year last year, but he came in, you know, after that, obviously the hip injury at Alabama and struggled. But, you know, with one full offseason under his belt now, you know, maybe he can take that next step. And if the Dolphins can win, you know, 11, 12 games, which is very possible, I think they've got a good team. You know, he's a guy that kind of fits a lot of those, checks a lot of those boxes that is really way down there in terms of the list of guys that are in odds. So if you want a long shot, that's one who I would pick. But I think Baker at 33-1 is still good. I mean, once you start getting in the 20s, I think that's kind of a little bit of a stretch. But I think at 33-1, Baker definitely fits a lot of the criteria. And I think he can, he's got a shot to get up there. So he's definitely worth a shot, I think, if Browns fans are interested.
Yeah, it's definitely a style of play thing, and it would have to be he won't put up yardage numbers like a lot of people will. So it'd be an efficiency thing, right? It'd have to be something wild, like 38, 39, 40 touchdowns. He throws a lot of red zone touchdowns. Maybe he keeps the interceptions down around 4-3. That's just the only way it can make sense for me. They got to win a lot of games, and he's got to be ridiculously efficient, kind of the way Kirk Cousins was. Not this past year, but the year before, 2019 season. So it'd have to be better than that. Just from an efficiency standpoint, they'd have to win 13, 14 games. And then it still probably wouldn't be enough. But if he does take this crazy step, which is in the realm of possible outcomes here, he could take a real step and they could put a lot more on his shoulders. And we could listen to this pod at the end of this season and laugh about it. So well, we won't talk offensive rookie of the year. I mean, Anthony Schwartz is going to get some chances, but not enough. I am interested in defensive rookie of the year, another award that tends to go edge. It can be some secondary playmakers, but you know, getting sacks is easy to quantify. You know, JOK and Newsome. I mean, JOK seems like an interesting little like Jeremy Chinn type of pick there. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So you know, historically, it's kind of crazy. In the last 25 years, 22 of the winners of Defensive Rookie of the Year have been first round picks, which really shocked me. Wow. I did not realize it was that heavily tilted to first rounders. Only three, obviously, non-first round picks. They were all linebackers, so that does, you know, that does give JOK a little bit of a shot here. And a couple of those have hit in the last handful of years. Darius Leonard, for example, is a most recent one. So, you know, the problem is Darius Leonard racked up a ton of tackles.
Yeah.
So, you know, JOK would really have to either you know, start from day one and rack up a bunch of tackles, or you know, get some fumble recoveries, you know, turnovers, kind of fluky plays. But, you know, if he can get a couple of turnovers, maybe turn one or two into a touchdown and is, you know, full-time starter, you know, he's got a shot. I probably wouldn't make him really high on my list just because of that. But, you know, at least he has a chance to win based on some of those factors. I mean, really the edge guys, like you said, typically win this award. But it's funny. It's literally it's edge rusher, and it's edge rusher drafted in the first, you know, the top half of round one is kind of the filter that wins a majority of these these awards. But the problem is that there really wasn't an edge rusher drafted in the top half. I think Jalen Phillips was close. I think he was like 18th. So there's really, you know, there wasn't a lot of edge rushers in general drafted high this year. So it kind of opened things up. So you might sneak a surprise winner in there. So maybe JOK does have a shot to do something here in terms of defensive rookie of the year. I mean, a guy that if you want to, again, I like longer shots, a guy, Nick Bolton, mm-hmm. who's a second round linebacker drafted by the Chiefs. you know, his, let's see what his odds are, because I did not look recently, but he's at 33-1 on DraftKings. He's a guy that could make some sense. Again, linebackers can win if you're not a first round pick, and he was a second round pick out of Missouri.
He'll rack up tackles for sure.
Exactly. He's going to rack up a ton of tackles because he's going to play on in the middle of the Chiefs defense. Teams want to run against the Chiefs. They always want to slow down the game, right? They all want to shorten the game, so they'll run a ton of times against that defense. So he will get those tackles. I'm not sure if he's going to really do much in pass coverage or pick a lot of passes off or anything like that, but he's obviously playing a really good team. So that's one guy that at least, you know, doesn't have a ton of competition, and he's going to be able to start on a really good team and rack up a bunch of tackles. So, that could fit. There's not a lot of options. You know, this isn't a great defensive class in general from the rookie class. So, it'll be interesting to see what happens here in terms of, rookie of the year. But, and it's hard from a cornerback's perspective. So, you didn't mention Newsom, but unless you get, 7-8 interceptions and you can turn one or two into touchdowns, and we saw Marshawn Lattimore and Marcus Peters win the award in the last 10 years, the only corners to do so, they did that. They both had, I think, 6, 7, 8 interceptions, and I think they had at least one or two touchdowns. You know, that's really hard to predict. A lot of pressure to do. So I'm not sure I'd put Newsom up there or any other corner, but those are a couple of the names that I would think of in terms of rookie of the year. But I think JOK wins the spot, and if he can fly around and do well in pass coverage and get some of those turnovers, he's got a shot.
Yeah, it's the corners were the guys early, right? Horn and Sertan, and it's like, it's just it's so tough to predict those guys. If you get a corner that performs super well in year one, it's like, you got a guy, man. There's just no doubt about it, because it's so hard. And you've made a great point through Twitter about Greg not having to, and the difference between him and other first round corners. And, he doesn't have to deal with the pressure of being a cornerback one right away. That's something Caleb Farley has to deal with, and many others in this first round. And that's something that Greg can kind of come in and maybe guard secondary targets, and that could make a little bit of a difference. But I do think JOK is, he's the play. If you want to bet on a Browns player, he could, like you said, some fumble luck, a strip sack, a scoop and score, some of those things go his way, and just does enough good things, and nobody else pops off. None of those linebackers taken in the first round, Zaven Collins or anything like that, do anything crazy. It could just be, we got to give it to somebody, and this guy in Cleveland did fairly well, so we'll throw it his way. But
And Jeremy Chinn, like you mentioned, almost won it last year with a lot of those.
Yeah.
He had a couple scores that they got defense. So, yeah, that's the angle if you're going to take JOK there.
Well, this has been great. There's been a ton of insight here, a ton of things that if you guys are Browns fans, you can pick up on and maybe put some money on and have a year-long investment in and watching and paying attention. And some other names, too, that if you're not just interested in the Browns, I'll open it up to UTA. Any others that we have not mentioned here that you think is particularly spicy for Browns fans?
No, I mean, I think you essentially hit them all. I mean, comeback player of the year would be one. OBJ is 25-1 right now on DraftKings. He's way down there in the list. And, look, this is probably a Dak Prescott award if he wants it, right? If he plays, halfway well. But, that remains to be seen how well he can play. But if OBJ has another, he's got to have an OBJ-type season, right? He's got to catch, 70, 80 balls and, 1,400 yards and double-digit touchdowns. That definitely vaults him near the top. So that's a fun one, right? It's always fun rooting for these flashy wide receivers to put up big numbers. And so, again, from a long shot perspective, he's a guy that clearly has the name recognition and the brand, the brand name and the power there. So that will help from a narrative perspective, obviously on a good team. And if he puts up the big numbers, he's going to be up there for comeback player of the year. So that would be the other one from a Browns perspective that I think makes some sense from a comeback player of the year perspective.
He will definitely get enough media coverage one way or the other. He'll get enough of that. Check out TA's stuff on Sharp Analysis, man. Get smarter about football, and it's not just betting stuff, man. It's understanding trends within play calling, trends within alignments, personnel groups. That's stuff that's really great. And you're looking to become a fully comprehensive fan of understanding tape and the nuances of what players are doing on the field. You got to know the data that's driving those decisions. So that's why he's a great follow, and I appreciate you taking time for us, man.
Jake, I appreciate it.
And that is a wrap for today's episode. A thank you to TA for coming on the pod, talking gambling odds with us. I think that can make a Brown season interesting and more fun if you put a little money on some of those guys. Maybe JOK, maybe Miles, gives you a nice little rooting interest. And I think that 10.5 line there is interesting. So I would also be remiss if I did not mention the Wyatt Teller piece that we have up on the OBR analytics site. Again, he is an interesting prospect for a contract extension, and our Cody Sweck lays it out beautifully for you to see his value and what a possible contract could look like. We will be back tomorrow to talk about more data. Had a conversation on Twitter Thursday, so I wanted to bring on some guys talking about early down passing and where the Browns hope to get to and what the NFL looks like with that maybe in future years. So we know we enjoy you guys checking things out. The listens are still great even in these tough months, so I appreciate you guys joining and listening. Thank you to our guests this week. We had guests from Baltimore, Cincinnati, Pittsburgh. So if you want to learn about those teams going into 2021, the division rivals, check it out. Tons of great info. Long podcast looking at where the teams are, the position by position analysis, expectations, all of it. I really enjoyed those. So thanks to those guys again for joining. Thanks again to Cleve TA for joining today and to you guys for listening. And check us out tomorrow for a Sunday bonus edition as well. Thanks again, guys. Have a great weekend and go Browns.